It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. While school is out, we're going to do some learning together here on Talk of Iowa. Learners of all ages are invited to join our Tuesday conversations with wildlife biologist Jim Pease about wild animals and wild places here in Iowa. On Thursdays, we're going to focus on Iowa history with historian Tom Moraine. This Thursday, we're going to find out how the 1918 flu pandemic played out here in Iowa. Today, we're going to learn about some of the many birds that surround us. Some are already nesting, others are migrating, and others are putting on spectacular displays as they search for mates. As you listen this hour, if you're near a computer, you can go to iowapublicradio.org, click on Talk of Iowa. You'll find a web post where you can see some of the birds we're talking about. You can also find a link to the Decora Eagle Cam. And now let me introduce our teacher. Jim Pease is a wildlife biologist. He is an emeritus associate professor of natural resource and ecology management at Iowa State University. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Charity. How are you this fine day?
Great.
It's cloudy, but still a nice day.
It is, and things are starting to warm up, so it's starting to feel, again, a little bit more like spring. And this is a time of year where there's a whole lot going on outside, right?
There is a terrific amount going on outside, and if you are at home, I hope you have a bird feeder or two up that you can watch. And if not, the outdoors is still open. It's not closed due to the coronavirus, and in fact, if you're healthy, it's certainly one of the best places, I think, to be. Is get outdoors, get a little exercise, go to your local park, and look for some of the things we're going to be talking about today.
Absolutely. Now, this is our first class, and already we have a special visitor to the class. John Howe is here with us. He is director of the Raptor Resource Project in Decora. Hello, John.
Hey, good morning, Charity. Good morning, Jim.
Thank you so much.
How are you?
Yeah, thank you for
good,
being here.
Good.
Now, it's been, 10 years now that you've been bringing, maybe more than 10 years now, that you've been bringing the Decora Eagles to all of us through the Decora Eagle Cam. We get to watch the eagles in their nests. We get to wait for those egg hatches. We get to watch both the parents, mom and dad, take care of the eaglets. John, tell me what we're seeing in your nests right now.
Yeah, so and this is a safe family that you can bring into your home, you know, with your computer or TV. So no problems with sharing any viruses or anything like that. The cameras are amazing, and we got about four to choose from right on the Decora Eagle Nest. So what we've been seeing, we just got through the first successful part of the breeding season, and that was the egg laying stage. So we have three eggs that our male there is DM2 for Decora male 2, and then we've got mom Decora there, and they right now they're trading off their shifts incubating those eggs. And I just was watching a little bit earlier this morning, and mom brought in a big chunk of, it looked like some hay material from one of the local farms, and sure enough, you know, right away they started building up. DM2 grabbed that, and he started building up and laying that right around him. So they drive the watchers kind of crazy this time of year, because everybody wants to see the eggs and see how they're doing and watch them roll. And they'll roll the eggs with sometimes their talons now and with their beaks, some really interesting behaviors. But right now we're watching the incubation stage.
Yeah. How at this nest, which is at the Decora Trout Hatchery, how long are we from having a hatch, do you think?
So I think we officially designated April 3rd for this nest, and that week of after April 3rd as our hatch watch here. So that's basically the time frame that we're looking at, where we'll start checking in. Hopefully we got a little bit of a view down in there onto those eggs. We did last year get some pretty great views of the eggs actually hatching, and I remember when D33 was coming out, when D32 was kind of in the bobblehead stage, we actually got to see breaking out with a beak, you know, carving through that eggshell and emerging from the egg. So
well, and when you say
we'll have views.
Right, if people are new to the Decora Eagles, you said D33. So these are the names. I mean, they're not very creative names, I have to say, John.
Yeah.
But that you give to the offspring, right?
Right, right. Pretty scientific there. We are tracking these eaglets and what happens with them. And speaking of that, we actually have D27, which has a transmitter on it that our board member and researcher, Brett Mandernack, down in Eagle Valley. What a place to be, huh? He's doing eagle research, and D27, we're watching her right now, and she's in the Decora area, but as things start warming up here, she'll probably go back up into up into Canada like she typically does for her summer migration.
How old do eagles need to be before they start laying eggs?
You know, typically, I believe it's around the time they become an adult. So they start getting their white head at about 4 years, and it's fully white at five. And we know that Mom Decora, when she came in back, it was around 2008, 2007, 2008, she was about 4 years old, and that first year that she came into this nest, she did lay eggs. So it's right about the time they become an adult.
And you said there are three eggs this year, and I've been watching these nests for a long time. It seems like we frequently see three eggs, but that's not always the case, right?
Yeah, you're right. We see differences in that even in the Decora area. We've got our Decora North nest, and the female there, DNF, she basically has, the 2 years that we've watched her, she's only laid two eggs. And the female Mrs. North, you know, before her was a three-egg layer. So, and Mom Decora down at the fish hatchery nest is laying three almost pretty much every year. Not all three have hatched every year, but she's been a three-egg layer. And that's, I think it's pretty typical that, you know, depending on if there's not some other issue with egg development or one cracking or something like that, they're pretty typical on schedule for how many eggs they lay.
How far apart do they lay each one of these eggs?
So this year it was really amazing. I think we got some of the best footage that we ever had of Mom laying her eggs. She laid them in the daylight for us this year, that's not very common for her. Over, you know, this is egg 34, 35, and 36, so you can see how many eaglets and eggs we've been watching over the years, but almost exactly 3 days apart for the three eggs that were laid. It was quite an amazing experience this year. The male DM2, he came into the nest. He brought a large fish, you know, kind of like the Last Supper deal. And I've never seen the male on the nest while the female eagle starts going into labor. It was very interesting to watch, and the audio is so good that you could actually hear her chirping with every contraction before that egg came out. So about 3 days is typical.
And so, course, they'll hatch 3 days apart, too, and the eaglets will be different ages. There's a developmental difference in 3 days.
Definitely, yeah. You know, we see with the falcons some delayed incubation where, you know, they actually won't really sit down on the eggs full time until the third egg is laid. Eagles, it's, you know, they're a little bit earlier in the year. You know, don't know exactly why, but they don't stand off the eggs quite as much as some of the raptors like falcons. But they will typically about 2 to 3 days in between each egg hatching. So, but we definitely know that you can tell and watch these eaglets through most of their development stage. You can see you know, the oldest one is a little bit further ahead, and you'll see those different things like flight feathers coming out of the thermal down. You'll see that the oldest one is a little bit ahead of the other one or two.
Now, you mentioned Decoran's north nest as well. We've been talking mostly about the main nest at the trout hatchery, but things are actually ahead at the Decoran north nest, right? Tell me a little bit about that family unit.
Yeah, so we rebuilt that nest after it came down in 2018, and that was pretty much a pivotal year at both nests. We had a mate change at both nests, so we lost Dad Decora at the fish hatchery nest. At the north nest, we actually had a changeover with the female eagle there. So we had a new eagle, female DNF, we call her. So last year was her first year at that nest, and this is her second year. And I think everyone who's watching that nest has been just really amazed at how well these eagles start to work together, you know, as a parental or family unit. The more time they spend together, it's really amazing to watch them with their nest preparations. And the female typically sits on the egg, you know, through the night shift, but just how they, it's just like clockwork, you know, the male will come in the morning and then relieve her, and she takes off for a while and takes a rest and gets out and then comes back. It's neat to see, but they have two eggs, like I said. And they laid them about almost a week earlier, in late February. They laid the two eggs, and they're a little bit ahead, about a week earlier. So we might see some eaglets hatching at the north nest. I'm pretty sure we will, before the main fish hatchery nest.
Well, John, I want you to stay with us. I have a couple more questions for you about the Decora eagles. I know you had a lot of drama in the last couple of years, and I want to get an update on the eaglets that actually were forced out of the nest early last year, how they have fared over the year. And I know Jim has some questions for you as well. So we'll be back in just a moment. With me, John Howe. He is the director of the Raptor Resource Project in Decora. We've been talking about the Decora Eagle Cam, and you can find a link to that on our website at iowapublicradio.org. Jim Pease, wildlife biologist, emeritus associate professor of natural resource ecology and management at Iowa State University, is also here, and we'll be back in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Class is in session on Talk of Iowa while school is out. Today is the first of our Tuesday series of shows bringing you information about wild animals and wild places here in Iowa with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. And even though it's just our first class session, we already have a special guest to class today. John Howe is the director of the Raptor Resource Project in Decora. They've been bringing us an opportunity for a decade to watch eagles in their nests up close and personal, and really to follow these eagles throughout the years. And we have seen mates be lost. We've seen some tragedies, but we've seen some really beautiful and incredible moments over the years as well. You can find a link that'll take you right to the nest at the trout hatchery on our website at iowapublicradio.org. But the Raptor Resource Project also gives you an opportunity to view other nests. There is the Decora North Nest. We've got eagles there that are just a few days from hatching their first egg. And actually, there's a link to a whole bunch of different kinds of birds there as well. And John, before we wrap up this conversation about the Decora eagles, as I mentioned, there's been a lot of drama over the last couple of years, a couple of just terrible tragedies. We saw the loss of a mother. We saw the loss of a father. And while we have these lovely mated pairs now, things look good. But last year, there was a terrible gnat outbreak. There were buffalo gnats that were swarming all over the eaglets. Remind us what happened.
Yeah, so buffalo gnats, black flies, synonymous, I think. We had so much rain and flooding and wet weather last year, and that is a perfect breeding scenario for the black flies or the buffalo gnats. So they need that flowing water to go through their hatching laying process. And basically, we typically always see them. I mean, we go through the head shaking phase. Like to call it when the eaglets are getting ready to fledge, like a week or two before fledge, you start to see those gnats as the weather is warming up and insects are hatching out. Some years it's worse than others. Last year was probably the worst I think that we've ever seen, and the gnats will bother other avian species too, but especially the eaglets last year. At both nests we had they were so bad that it pretty much drove the eaglets out of the nest at least 2 weeks early. And part of that, D32 actually did break one of its legs in a pretty tough spot, pretty close to a joint in one of the legs. The other was recovered, D33, but they went into rehab. You know how that goes, right? You've got a little bit of experience with that.
So they actually went to live with a wildlife rehabilitator who has a federal license, because you have to have a federal license to be able to take care of bald eagles. But how did they fare?
So they went to SOAR, Saving Our Avian Resources. Kay there, Kay Newman and her staff there basically took expert care of them. Obviously, the first thing they did go through it, Dr. Laura Johnson, our board member and veterinarian doctor, we're so lucky to have these folks to draw on and actually, you know, rely on if we have incidents like this with eagles. But eaglets made it over to SOAR after initial care by Dr. Laura Johnson and for D32. And so first thing, broken bone, you know, can't really set that thing. It was really close to a joint. A cast was put on. The eaglets were anemic. They had been bitten by the black flies, many, many, many black flies. So they were a little bit underweight from where they should have been. They were a little bit anemic, and you could definitely see physical signs that they were under stress. So first thing was just checking them out, getting that leg taken care of that was broken for D32, and then, you know, feeding them, and they were weighed. Characteristics of eagles was easy. I think after time, Kay said, we'll just weigh them, and we'll check and see, and we'll find out whether they're male or female. And D32 ended up to be a male, and D33 turned out to be a female. Difference in weight there. So they basically went through the genesis of learning how to socialize. There were a number of other eagles there. Then they went in to a flight pen that was 60 feet and building up that wing and muscle capacity there to fly. And then longer flight pen after that. And when D33 was ready to go with another group of eagles, they were released was called a soft release. Just let them open up the door and let them, you know, go out of the flight pen and come back if they wanted to. I don't believe that any of them came back into the pen, but they will stick around in the area sometimes for a little bit. And then D32 just recently here, I believe it was March 3rd, was just soft released with some other eaglets. So they're both hopefully flying free and healthy right now.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm so glad there's a happy ending to that. People were so concerned about it last year. And of course, that's part of life in nature, Jim. You know, we want to see the beautiful stuff. We want to see the cute stuff. But sometimes there are harsh realities as well, right?
Yeah, that's for sure. And certainly black flies are one of them. John, watching the eagle cam and watching this eagle sit there, if you enjoy parenting, you'll appreciate this eagle sitting there for hours on end, and they switch off as you pointed out, but sitting there, and I think they tell me if this is true, they look bored sometimes.
You know, I think that is, it's easy to get that feeling, you know, looking and watching at them sitting for so many hours. You know, they do sleep, and you'll see them. They are very attentive, and I think that's a good point that you bring up. There is so much going on this time of year. There's migration happening with eagles coming through the territory and other possible, you know, intruders. So if you watch, you'll see that, you know, if they're not taking a nap, which is mostly at the nighttime, either, you know, the parent, which is typically the male, is going to pick his roost area, and a lot of times it will be right up on one of the nest branches by the tree, but typically female there. Other than the sleeping stage, they are attentive, you know, most of the day, and they're watching and they're looking around. And, you know, I've watched mom watch, you know, Dad Decora or DM2 flying around, and then you'll hear a big crack, and then you'll see him come back through one of the entry points into the nest with a branch or a stick, and these are pretty big branches. So I think it's interesting to watch how they respond to the birds and the squirrels and other wildlife that's around them. Mice is a big thing that keeps them on their toes. There's mice, sure, living in that nest, or they come up into the nest, and lots of stuff to watch.
Well, and Jim, as we've talked about, the male and female take turns incubating the eggs. The male and female take turns feeding and caring for the young. How typical is that in the bird world, that both the mother and father are actively raising the babies?
Yeah, I think it depends on the species entirely. In ducks, for example, that is pretty rare. Once the eggs are laid, for example, in mallards, you'll see in the early summer, you'll see mallard males all hanging out, this sort of bachelor group out hanging out on the sandbars or on the shoreline while mom's taking care of, or not only incubating the eggs, but raising the young ones as well. But in other species, there is a lot of sharing that goes on. It just depends on the species. There's no sort of absolute rule of thumb. But in most ducks, it's the female that does the raising. In some species, believe it or not, the male does the raising. Mom lays the eggs. But there are some shorebirds that called phalaropes, and these shorebirds, the female lays the egg, but the female is the brightly colored one, not the male, and the male has to sit on the eggs and raises the young all the way through. So it really varies a lot with the species, but it's an interesting parenting strategy. Watching these eagles sit on the nest, you'll notice how they'll turn their head up, like John was talking about, watching for things that might fly over. They'll rearrange. It's kind of fun watching them. Well, I think that this bit of straw or corn stubble or something that's been brought in needs to be over on this side.
Right. There's no screen time for them. They've got to come up with stuff to do to fill those hours.
Right. No, boy, it's not over here. No, maybe it should go over here. And, you know, I think they really are bored sitting there for a while.
Now I think we have to have a vocabulary lesson. We're going to introduce the word anthropomorphism,
yeah,
which is giving human characteristics to the creatures that we watch.
That's right. That's right. So, but it's fascinating to watch them. I know, John, do you have any idea how many people around the world are watching the eagle cam?
So, you know, at any one time, typically lately it's been, this is a little bit, you know, the peak moments are egg laying, and probably the most popular time is when the eggs are hatching and the eaglets are in the first couple days. So I think last year we had between 8,000 to 10,000 people at any one time watching the Decora Eagle Cam. And when you think about that, that's a big number. And it pretty
that's
much is every country in the world. But the state where I think most of our watchers come, it's not surprising, from Iowa and you know, a lot of the Midwestern states, but a lot of people One thing I want to mention, too, since you're talking about the education part, is we've got some currently practicing and retired teachers that have been fans of the Eagles over the years, and they've used the Eagles in their classrooms for education, and they have put together such an amazing program that we rolled out here recently. We've had the educational chat where classrooms are can check in, teachers can ask questions about the Eagles, but more recently lesson plans were put together that are COPPA compliant and NGSS or other standards are met and listed out in those lesson plans. So lots of opportunity, you know, kind of pent up at home or whatever with the virtual learning here to learn more about Eagles.
Well, John, I hope this is a much less eventful year than the last couple have been. And thank you so much for talking with us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
John Howe is the director of the Raptor Resource Project in Decorah. And Jim, all right, we've talked only about eagles so far. There are so many more birds to talk about during this hour. But eagles are one of those super early nesters. Are there other birds of prey, other raptors that are also on the nest already this time of year?
Yeah, there are. As a matter of fact, great horned owls, they begin nest building, if you want to call it building. Great horned owls, you look at that beautiful eagle's nest, and eagle's nests have been measured. Some have weighed up, to, they add to it every year. They're very, what are called persistent on their nest. So come back to the same place year after year and defend that nest site. And so they add to the nest each year, and older nests can be very, very heavy. There are some that that easily weigh a ton or more of sticks and other things that they bring into the nest. So they can be it's one of the reasons they get toppled sometimes in storms because they choose the tops. In Iowa, their favorite tree is the cottonwood tree, but they'll also build them, if you're in northeastern Iowa, they'll build them in the tops of white pines and other things. None of those are very strong trees, and so they can get toppled in the storms. Great horned owls, on the other hand, are not pretty nesters at all. They will use just about anything they can. I've seen them in old red-tailed hawk nests. They'll use the top, while they are considered to be cavity nesters, living in holes. They're not particular about how that cavity is. I've seen them in cliff faces sometimes, in a hole in a cliff. I've seen them in the broken top of a tree, so it's kind of leaning over. the top is broken off and has a kind of a cavity in there. They sometimes use old crow's nests. They're not terribly particular, but they will actually begin laying their eggs in January, early February, and so they're on their eggs. In fact, the young have hatched in many great horned owl's nests by now, and or will soon hatch, much like the eagles. And you think about that from an evolutionary standpoint, it's quite interesting because it means that just as their young really need lots and lots and lots of food, is when a lot of other things are also hatching out young, and so there's lots of food available. So it's an interesting strategy, and I think it's one of the reasons that great horned owls are one of our most successful owl species in the Midwest, because they take advantage of every little opportunity they can to get an advantage.
And they've been known to steal nests from eagles even.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in fact, I think we've seen it that I don't know if it was the Decorah nest or another one that I was watching some years ago, where there was quite a standoff between a pair of eagles and a pair of great horned owls.
That takes some real courage to stand up to a pair of eagles. I mean, great horned owls are big and tough, but eagles are bigger and tougher.
Yeah, you're talking a 3-pound bird, which is the great horned owl, but their talons are so sharp and so strong, just like the talons of an eagle, much, much larger bird, much heavier bird. But maybe the owls have a little advantage of being smaller and a little more dexterous in the air, perhaps. But yeah, it's quite a standoff. And so eagles, you know, they're both beginning early, but the owls actually begin even a little earlier, and so have an advantage that way. I've seen them, in fact, when I was doing research up in northern Alberta, when I was at University of Wisconsin, I did research up in northern Alberta, and a colleague of mine,
Jim, I think we're going to have to save that story for after we come back from a break. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about birds of Iowa right now on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. With me, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. He is also an emeritus associate professor of natural resource and ecology management at Iowa State University. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Iowa birds. We've learned a lot about eagles, but we're learning about some of the birds that surround us this time of year. And we're going to talk about migration in just a moment. With me, wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and you're welcome to join the conversation. If you have questions, give us a call. The number is 866-780-9100. That's 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Learners of all ages are welcome to join the conversation. And Jim, you were just finishing a story about some research that you were doing in northern Canada.
Right. Yeah, I was saying that a colleague of mine who was working on raptors, in particular gray horned owls and red-tailed fox. Great-horned owls were nesting in January and February, and they're not particular about their nests. So they would steal the nests from the red-tailed hawks that the red-tailed hawks had built the previous year, because the red-tails would go south, and the owls would hang around all winter as long as there was prey to eat. And so they'd begin nesting, and when the red-tails would come back, the owls would have already been still in the nest, and so they had red tails and had to build another one. So they're very opportunistic, these great horns, and it's why they're so successful. Now, there's another common Iowa owl that people in the last month, perhaps if you've gotten out in the evening, you might have heard them. They're the barred owl. They're the ones that go, oh, 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 oh. That's who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all? And the barred owl is about half the size in terms of weight of about a pound and a half bird, a little bit smaller, don't have those ear tufts. And if you look on the IPR website for Talk of Iowa, you'll see pictures of both the great horns that have those ear tufts that stick up and the barred owls that have no ear tufts. And you'll notice also the difference in the color of their eyes. The eyes of a great horn have a yellow iris with a black center, whereas the barred owls have a all dark brown and black center.
And so, great horned owls look really intimidating and angry, and barred owls look kind of cuddly. I think that's a good way to remember too.
Speaking of anthropomorphism, right?
So let's talk about migration, because that's something that is going on this time of year. We were just talking about some of the raptors that are staying put, although John Howe mentioned that looking at some of the younger eagles, we'll see them traveling up north this time of year because they're not nesting yet. But with migration, what kinds of shifts are we seeing right now?
Well, it's a really massive shift that has just begun. We have the birds, some birds that have been here in the relatively balmy temperatures of Iowa for the winter, that will be shifting back north. Now, as I look out my window here at my feeders, I see dark-eyed juncos. I see, which is a ground nesting bird and a ground feeding bird, that sort of slate gray back with white bellies. I see a couple of white-throated sparrows. They're the ones that sing, "Oh, sweet Canada, Canada, Canada." And And they're actually have been singing for a couple of weeks now. And I also see, not right this moment, but I do see red-breasted nuthatch. Now, all three of those species will be going back north, nesting up in the boreal forest of northern Minnesota, Wisconsin, into Canada. And if you go up there on canoe trips in the summertime, you'll see them up there in the summertime. But so they're shifting back north, but they're still here. Perhaps they know something that we don't. We haven't perceived yet. But they're going north. And then we have other birds that are arriving here. We've seen lots and lots of waterfowl, ducks, and geese coming through. And one of those that will stay, I had on my pond the other day, I had about 10 pairs of the beautiful wood ducks. They're all paired up pretty much already. They come back ready to nest, and they will, if they can find a hole, they are cavity nesters as well. They nest in the holes of trees or in even artificially built wood duck boxes.
And that is really unusual. Most ducks lay their eggs on the ground, right? So wood ducks, that's pretty bizarre for a duck to lay their eggs up in a tree.
There are a few that do it, but yeah, wood ducks are the primary one. Certainly in Iowa, they're the species we look for. And you think about what they're competing with. There are lots of things that nest in holes. Not only small birds like wrens and chickadees and nuthatches and that, but as we said, owls, including great horns, if they can find a big enough cavity. The barred owls will nest in there, and even the little 8-inch-high screech owl will nest in holes. In addition to all the mammals, the squirrels, the raccoons, the possums want to use those holes in the trees. So for wood ducks, it's a competition to find the right hole, the right place at the right time, and compete for other species with it.
Well, and okay, another issue with nesting up in a tree, we think about all the little birds that we know about, and you know, we know, so a robin will lay their eggs in a tree and they'll feed the babies until the babies have feathers and can begin almost to fly. Those babies will jump down and they'll learn to fly the first few days after they fledge. But with wood ducks, their little ducklings aren't anywhere near flying when they have to get out of the nest. Tell me how that works. It seems really unfair.
Yeah, well, it's just a different strategy. And thinking in terms of strategies, they have a strategy that says, I'm going to be what's called precocial, meaning that if you're a youngster listening to this, your parents may say, well, you're a very precocious youngster. That means that you've matured in certain ways early. And that's what happens with most species of ducks. When they hatch out of the egg, within 24 hours, they are running around on the ground, if you're a ground nester. In the case of wood ducks, they have to jump from that nest when they are about 24 to 48 hours old.
So they're a day old and they have to jump about a story or so to get to the ground in many cases.
10, 15, 25, 30 feet even sometimes up in a tree or up in a box, jump down to the ground, and they do bounce pretty well and follow their mom. Their mom is outside on the ground calling them out, saying, okay, come on, jump, jump. And then she leads them to a nearby pond. Now, there's a lot of interesting research done on wood ducks by Fred Leopold, who grew up in Burlington, where I grew up. And Fred was just this great advocate for wood ducks. And some of his research found that wood ducks will nest up to a mile away if the hole is a good cavity. They will nest up to a mile away from water. And so the ducklings then have to jump out of that nest, follow that female all the way over that mile. Sometimes in the case of in cities, they'll cross streets and roads and railroad tracks and all kinds of things and find their way to a water source where they will gradually grow and become hopefully adults. If that is, if they don't get taken by a large bass or a northern pike or other predators along the way.
So if you think you have it tough, try being a wood duck. So before we run out of time, I want to talk about two other birds in particular that have made their way back to Iowa. And one is the killdeer, because we see a lot of these all over the place. They're kind of unusual, I think, for Iowa. They look more like the kind of bird you'd see on a lakeshore or even at the ocean. So tell us a little bit about killdeer and also where they lay their eggs.
Well, killdeers are, in fact, a shore bird. You will see them along the shores. If you get on Iowa rivers or go down to the river shore or even a lakeshore, you'll often hear that, killdeer, killdeer, killdeer. And you can hear them as they fly over as well. And they are shorebirds, and they will nest on the ground, sometimes on a sandbar, on a rock bar, and sometimes in the middle of a parking lot. They're not particular. They lay four eggs. They're very pointed on one end. And the points usually all sort of line up towards the center of the nest. The nest is not much more than sort of a place where they've kind of scattered the rocks a little bit. And
right, so basically they're laying their nests on gravel in many cases. There's no padding there.
No, nothing at all. No, and the eggs, are they look like the rocks. So they're pretty well camouflaged, and they tend to, as you mentioned when we were talking about the eagles, they tend to lay an egg a day for about 4 days, and then they begin sitting on them. So they tend to hatch what we call synchronously. They'll all hatch at one time, within a few hours of one another. And so then the young they're also precocial. And they're out running around on the beach or, in some cases, the parking lot. Some cases, the rock roofs of buildings. Wherever they might lay them, they're certainly on a flat surface and not much of a nest at all. So they're quite fascinating little guys.
Absolutely. And we can see them running around all over the place right now.
Yeah, there are lots of them that have come back. You can hear them if you're out in the evening. You can actually hear the migration because you'll hear that killdeer, killdeer, killdeer. And they're coming through. They call as they fly, even especially during migration. So, and you certainly see them on in many places. They'll also feed in fields, some of the bare fields that are looking for insects in the soil underneath the corner of the bean stubble, or even in hayfields sometimes. You'll see them sometimes on the roadsides.
All right, let's talk about woodcocks before we run out of time. Now, this is a funny little bird, and this is mating season for woodcocks, and the males are putting on a pretty amazing display right now.
Oh, they are. They're another shorebird. They have this very strange-looking body, a little kind of a squat body. They weigh less than half a pound, a few ounces, 6-7 ounces. And they're a little brown bird. They actually nest here in Iowa. Most people don't realize they nest in Iowa. They nest on the ground in woodlands, and they look just like the leaves that they build their nests in, that same color. And they have a beak that's 2.5-3 inches long, and they use that beak to probe down into the soil to get eat worms. And their eyes are up, sort of up on the top of the sides of their head. They're very strange-looking birds. And the males right now, and you can go out in the evening, I really want to encourage people to just go out to a park or a county park or a city park and listen for a particular sound. You'll hear it's called pinking. It goes like, beep, beep, beep. It's a very nasal sort of, it's a vocalization that they do. And it's males, they're strutting around with their tiny little tail up in the air, and they're kind of stomping on the ground and going, beep, beep, And then they fly up in the air. And if you're a good listener and have good ears, you can hear that the twitter in their wings as they fly way up, and it kind of goes. I don't know if you even hear that over my phone, but it's a light sort of whistle as they circle up and go way up in the high. And then as they fly down, their wings, the feathers in their wings make another sound that kind of goes. And then they fly in quietly and land. And if you're sitting there watching them, it is absolutely amazing. Wear dark clothes, get out there. As they fly in and land, they'll start right away and they'll put their little tail up in the air and stomp around and go, beep, beep. It's just this incredible dance.
And if you go on your computer and you search for Sky Dance of the Woodcock for information about woodcocks, you'll find videos of this too if you're unable to get out. And of course, you know, if you get excited about any of the things we're talking about, there are so many resources available online to learn more. But Jim, before we run out of time, you're talking about all of these different species of birds, but for a lot of us, when we go out and we look around, we just see birds because we can't tell them apart. What is a good resource if you want to learn to identify the birds around you? How do you get started?
Well, there are lots of resources online, and certainly, as you mentioned, in books. You can go to, there are lots of bird identification books available now online through the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and others. You can actually sort of eBird and all sorts of things available online. Or you can go to the traditional books, the Peterson Guide to North American Birds. I really like there's a Sibley Guide to Birds. There are some from National Geographic. But I would say if you have an opportunity to, once the coronavirus self-isolation is over, you can hook up with some people that know a lot about birds. Talk to your local county conservation board, any member of the local Audubon Society. Those they have field trips all the time going on. I know the local Audubon societies here in Iowa often have monthly or sometimes weekly field trips throughout the spring. Go out with other birders, sit and watch birds at your window. Get out in the evening or the early morning is the best time to see and hear, especially now as we're thinking about setting up territories and beginning to nest. You'll see, you'll be able to hear because the songs of birds are the ways that they establish those territories and say, I'm a healthy male, I want to sing and attract these females, and this is my territory. So get out there and explore in the evenings and the mornings, and you'll hear lots of stuff going on.
All right. Well, Jim, you will be back next Tuesday as we continue this series about Iowa's wild animals and wild places. We're going to start talking about mammals next time when you come back. Jim Pease, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Wildlife biologist Jim Pease. And again, we'll be continuing this series every Tuesday while school is out to learn more about Iowa nature. And while you're stuck inside, I highly recommend spending some time watching those Decora Eagles on Decora Eagle Cam. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.